As I'm sure all of you know, in the course of the last century, in the West generally, and in this country also, there has been a great growth, a great development in the study of what we may call comparative religion. Now, this study was confined at first to scholars, to university circles, and especially to the professional orientalists. But gradually, as the decades went by, religious people, people who weren't interested in philology or philosophy technically, or in anthropology or sociology, but in religion, came to pay more and more attention to the various religions of the world other than their own. And this, I feel, was a very, very significant development. When religious people, that is to say Christians, in this country started giving serious consideration to the other great religions of the world, taking them not just as anthropological curiosities, not as something exotic, but as religion, as faith, in which people believed and by which they lived, and in which, therefore, there must be something of value, even though they might not choose to regard that something as being quite so valuable as what they found in their own religion. Now, I must say frankly that after my return to this country, after an interval of 20 years, I was quite pleasantly surprised by the degree of interest in non-Christian religions, including, perhaps I might even say, especially Buddhism, that there is among sincerely religious people, which means for the most part Christian people, in this country. I must say at the same time that this surprise was all the more of a surprise and all the more pleasant, inasmuch as my encounters in India with what one might call the professional representatives of the various Christian churches in the form of the missionaries has not been of the happiest nature. I feel now, after having had a certain amount of contact with various Christian bodies and individuals in this country in the course of the last 7 or 8 months, that the missionaries and the attitudes of the missionaries, especially towards other religions, are certainly not representative of the more advanced religious thinking in this country today. Now remember, not so many years ago, I went from Kalimpong to a place very near the Bhutan border called Pedong. It's about 16 miles from Kalimpong. As you notice, names, proper names in this area all end in O-N-G, Ong. So from Kalimpong I went to Pedong. And there was a fair there, an annual fair, to which the village people of that area brought their produce, and there were prizes and exhibitions and things of that sort. So various Christian missionaries had quite literally set up their tents and were busy proclaiming the gospel and distributing tracts. And amongst other people, they buttonholed me. So one of them says to me, "Look here, we have to tell you plainly that your fate after death is going to be far worse, far more terrible than that of other people." So I, of course, inquired why. So they said, well, this particular person said, well, not only have you gone astray yourself in becoming a Buddhist, but you are leading also others astray. So your fate will be much worse than the fate of the others. Now I must say that this sort of attitude I certainly haven't encountered in this country. And I've come to the conclusion that that sort of attitude is more or less out of date. And it would seem that those who go to places like India as missionaries, as propagators of the gospel, are people who, one might say, almost can't fit in through the religious world and religious life of this country today. They're, as it were, anachronisms. So they leave this country. Since my return here, during this last 7 or 8 months, I must say that my own contacts with Christians of various denominations have been extremely cordial, and especially I might mention the Anglicans, the Methodists, the Quakers, and the Unitarians. Of course, some people will tell you that the Quakers and Unitarians are not really Christians. At least they're not admitted to membership of the World Council of Churches, but we won't go into that today. And I have been very gratified, very pleased to find that amongst these various bodies, the Anglicans, the Methodists, Quakers, Unitarians, there are quite a number of people who are interested in Buddhism. I remember not so many weeks ago I spent a very pleasant weekend at a place, in fact it was at an old farmhouse near Maidstone in Kent, and there was a group of young Methodists staying there at that particular place. And every evening we sat up very, very late discussing Christianity, Buddhism, Methodism, Wesley, the Buddha, Zen, and so on and so forth. And I was surprised, and again pleasantly surprised, to find that one of these young men, who was a lay preacher in the Methodist Church, had acquired not only quite a sound understanding of Zen, but was extremely appreciative of it also, and felt, when I suggested to him, that there was something even in John Wesley's own teaching and example faintly redolent of Zen. He said it hadn't occurred to him before, but when I pointed out one or two resemblances and parallels, he at once conceded that there was a very interesting resemblance. So this, I feel, is a very, not only favorable, but very pleasing situation in which we find in this country that there are many religious people, even members of churches, who are not only interested in Buddhism theoretically, but who are willing to learn from Buddhism, even though without actually becoming Buddhists. Such being the situation, it's only right and only natural, I feel, that there should be some Buddhists who are interested in following and in understanding developments, modern developments, within the field of Christianity. Not so very long ago, you know, there were held in Rome 2 Vatican councils. And it was very interesting to note what widespread interest they aroused, not only in Christian countries and Christian circles, but even in Muslim countries, in Buddhist countries, and in Hindu India. Not only interest, one might even say that the proceedings of these councils were followed with sympathy all over the world by religious-minded people who knew about them. I must say, though, that personally I was rather disappointed at the outcome of these councils, and was rather reminded of the saying or about the mountain being in labor and producing a mass. But anyway, that is neither here nor there. So, in such a situation, I feel it's only natural that some Buddhists at least should be interested in the Bishop of Woolwich and in this very remarkable book of his, Honest to God. If we try to look at it broadly, we can understand that in this book he is trying to come to grips with a problem, or perhaps with problems, which are common nowadays to all religions, and which all religions have to face, and all religious people have to face, though perhaps not in the same degree. Now, what is that problem? That problem, I think we may say, is the problem of how to restate traditionally received spiritual truths in such a way, in such a language, as will be meaningful to contemporary humanity. That's the problem. In the case of Christianity, perhaps, the problem is more acute than it is in at least some of the other religions. And therefore, I feel that the case of the Bishop of Woolwich, the example he has given in writing this book, is particularly interesting to all of us, including Buddhists. Because we see him in this book in a very honest way, we might say even in a very manly way, in a very straightforward way, coming to grips, or trying to come to grips, with a problem with which Buddhists also, though perhaps not in the same degree, are concerned. Now, before going on to speak about the contents of this book, I must say something in appreciation of the spirit in which it has been written. Almost my first impression on reading this book, even though I went through it on my first reading very rapidly, was that the writer of this book is an intensely sincere person, an intensely honest person. He cares very deeply about the religious, about the spiritual life. But at the same time, he's not blind. He's not shutting his eyes to the facts of the contemporary world. And he is intensely concerned that religion should be relevant to life here and now, today. That he has at the same time courage to reject, or at least to be willing to reconsider, formulations which have become perhaps a trifle outworn or even out of date. So, having, as he does seem to me to have, this sort of spirit, this sort of sincerity, this sort of honesty, I think it's only natural that, even though he may not command always the agreement of Buddhists, he certainly can command their sympathy and their respect.